Say What? Say What Radio Show. With no agenda. It's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong.
And welcome to the... What are we doing? Say What Show. Welcome to the Shay West. It's Shay West. Welcome to the Shay West. We're going to try this again. Welcome to the Say What Show. This is Nancy Hopkins speaking to you. It is November 3rd, 2018. And with me today is Gene Rockefeller, who you are very familiar with, and Cindy Jacobs, who has been on with us before. And I'm just going to basically say, hi, Cindy. Hi, Jan. Gene.
Hi, Nancy.
Yeah, it's Cindy's morning, but I'm acting like I just woke up. Or maybe not woke up yet. Oh, my goodness. Okie dokie. So why don't you do this, Gene? Why don't you just introduce Cindy? Because, well, she's your friend, and hopefully she'll be my friend by the end of this. go ahead, Gene. Tell us who Cindy is.
So Cindy is a director of Free Rein Australia, and she works with people and her horses, and she works with clients and helps them release trauma through working with the horses. It's probably a lot more than that, but why don't you tell them what you do, Cindy? That might even be better. You could probably explain it better than I can.
Well, actually, I thought that was pretty good. Yeah. So in a nutshell, that's what we do is we help people to clear the energies that are in their body that are held, which are all related to trauma. And just to perhaps qualify that term trauma, we're in physical bodies. And so we experience traumas all the time. And, you know, they're on a scale. So a minor trauma might be something like, not that it's minor, but you know, you might be driving in your car and a car pulls out in front of you. So for that split second, there is that shock where you have to actually respond. So that's something small, but that registers in our bodies. And then of course, on the other end of the scale is war trauma and PTSD and natural disasters. And then, I don't know where this fits on the scale. It's pretty severe is early childhood trauma where we felt abandoned or rejected, and we might not have been literally abandoned or rejected, but our young minds form these opinions and beliefs, and then those beliefs carry forward into our adult lives, and they drive our behaviors. So those are considered developmental traumas, and there's lots of different types of traumas. So basically anything that is overwhelming to us, you know, depending on how old we are and what our capacity is, or anything that's overwhelming, that where a boundary was violated, where we were disempowered and it caught us by surprise. Those are the main four aspects of trauma. And so the way we work is that the energies of those traumas are still alive and active in our bodies. So if you can reflect on any event that happened in your life, and when you think about it and you feel a bit of a charge in your body, that's a sign that that energy is still there and it's still running the show. So what we do is we invite those energies to surface, and then we work with them to clear in a controlled and safe way. And the horses, with their enormous hearts and their big resonant field of coherent energy, it just helps contain the person's body so that they feel safe. So it's not a mental thing. It's an energetic thing where the body feels like it's contained. And when we activate these energies in the person's body, then the body feels okay to discharge and release that. So your version was a lot shorter, Gene, than mine.
So the horses create an environment of security and safety so that people can let go of their traumas?
Yeah. So if you imagine if you go into a therapist and you're in a room and you're wanting to share, you know, your trauma, before you just spill your guts, you're assessing the environment. You know, your body is assessing, how safe am I? You know, can I trust this person? You know, will I be held? Will I be? So at a cognitive level, we're doing that. But biological level, our bodies are feeling into the space, and what they're feeling for is a coherent energy that is pulsing back at us, so that if we go into a bit of chaos, that coherent energy can soothe and calm us and keep us safe. So it's a lot harder when it's person to person, because humans carry stuff, you know, and our nervous systems, because, you know, the culture we exist in, aren't always as calm and regulated as perhaps healthy horses, where, you know, they can, as a herd, you know, they take care of each other and they pulse this calm, soothing, coherent energy. So what I notice is that people feel ready to clear their traumas even before they get here, coming up the driveway or even looking at my website. There's something about the energy field of the horses that their bodies are tapping into. And my analogy is like, you know, a submarine has that depth sounder, a depth finder, and it sends out a signal to see where the bottom is, and then it bounces back. And so in a similar way, when people enter into the horse's space, you know, their nervous system is feeling out to the resonant field, and then they hit the resonant field of the horses, and that bounces back to them. And so, oh, okay, so I'm contained and safe because I can feel this soothing, coherent, pulsing energy that's enveloping me. So I won't get consumed or overwhelmed by my trauma.
Okay, let me set the stage here for people that don't realize the full implications of what you're doing down there. Am I remembering it's 27 acres that you have in Australia?
93.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so you got 93 acres of basically a wild environment. There's not buildings. And I mean, this is the wild. They're out there. And how many horses do you have running free? Because your website is named Free Rein, which means that you're not... this is what amazed me. You don't ride them. They're not pets, like, you know, we sometimes think of them. Correct?
That's true. I was just laughing because I was thinking they probably think I'm their pet. But anyway.
Oh, yeah. That's probably very true. But what you bring up here, okay, so we've got this amazing place, 93 acres, and these animals that are free to be themselves. They're not constrained by what we perceive they should be doing and being and, you know, interacting with us. So they themselves are in a state of security, of feeling, you know, their own worth, their own power. And
that's right.
That's something that you have brought to the table, because you have made this wonderful habitat for them. So in the first case, we've got a situation of just amazing magical potential because of the way you've set this up. But the other thing, the two things that I, as you were going through this, and of course I do know your story, but as you were going through it, there were two things that just jumped out at me that I don't think would have jumped out at me the first time I heard the story, because we've gone through so many changes since then. And that is, first off, you are acknowledging the power and energy force of these horses, that they're putting out a field of energy, that the horses themselves and your environment, the wonderful habitat, is putting out a particular frequency of security and health and undoubtedly love and freedom and all the really good energy things that people don't confront in their normal environments. That's number one. You're acknowledging the energy power of the place and the animals, so the place and the space. And then you're doing something that I think that probably most people would balk at what are you talking about? The body knows and the body's fit. What are you talking about here? You know, but that is so critical to who and what we are right now, because that energetic concept of, yes, we can sort of get around in our heads. Okay, we got energy is consciousness. Consciousness is energy. And it, you know, you feel kind of a little bit detached from it. We can kind of get into that. We can kind of get into the fact that we are spiritual beings living in these physical bodies. And so the spiritual being is an energy. But the concept of the physical body actually being an energy body that just happens to be solid to us, we see it as solid because we're all vibrating at basically the same frequency, so it's like frozen energy. And that's where I think a lot of people can get, it's not just your ability for your mind to put forth, I want to be better. Your body has to do it too.
Well, and the body records everything. Everything that, like Cindy was talking about, even like a little trauma where, you know, a car would pull out in front of you, that jolt gets recorded in your cellular memory. And it becomes, you know, it shapes who you are, how you think, how you perceive things. And so it affects you in a lot of, collaterally in ways that you wouldn't even realize.
And just to interrupt there, so let's just take that example. So a car pulls out in front of you, and what happens is your body has like these fuel injectors that just release cortisol and adrenaline. And so those chemicals literally hurt in your body. And so they shoot through your body. And so most people won't argue that you can't destroy energy. You know, that's kind of a physics fact, you know. So we've just now shot this energy into our bodies. And so that energy is now in our bodies. And it's like free radical in our body somewhere. And it doesn't get discharged unless we actually actively move that energy out of our bodies. So it stays in our bodies, and it gets stuffed into, the body stuffs it into areas that are non-critical to start with, but it accumulates. So if you can imagine over time, if we continue to have events, you know, whether they're stressful events in, you know, on the road or, you know, arguments with friends or family or work situations or whatever, if we continue to just release these chemicals into our bodies, which are these an energetic charge that doesn't get released unless we consciously release it, then our bodies start to break down and we get disorders or dis-ease. So yeah, it's really important to actually pay attention to what our bodies are holding.
Now, let me ask you both a question, because did you both kind of like come to this because you were born with this knowledge in you, this concept of the body? Because I think it is a difficult concept for most people. We certainly don't teach it. So was it something that you just sort of like understood? It was an innate understanding of this connection? Or is it something that you actually had to learn yourselves?
I learned it over time with working with clients and working on myself, you know, just trying to uncover things. And it's amazing, because when you start really clearing your cellular memory, things come up that you didn't even know that you forgot. It's incredible, the things that we've suppressed. And sometimes they're what you would think would be insignificant. But like Cindy was saying, you know, something happens to a child, they don't know how to comprehend it. They don't know how to process it. So even more when you're a child, because you don't know how to process these events that happen, you don't have an understanding of why it's occurring, they really get recorded in the cellular memory.
Yeah. Yeah. And in answer to your question, Nancy, I'm trained through somatic experiencing. So Dr. Peter Levine has an organization, and he's developed a modality called somatic experiencing. And it's becoming quite popular right across the world, and predominantly, well, not predominantly, but in the States, there are a lot of SE practitioners. And we work with the nervous system. And the model, interestingly enough, it's based on how animals respond to stress in the wild. And we have the same nervous system as animals do. So Dr. Levine studied, you know, or had the question, you know, how come animals in the wild don't get PTSD when, you know, they might face life-threatening events every day? And so what he discovered was that there is a pattern that we typically need to follow to move trauma through and out of our bodies. So, for example, let's say you were an antelope and you got pulled down by, I don't know, a cougar, and then the cougar's about to eat your leg, so you're in a freeze response, and a hyena comes along and says, hey, I want some of that. So the cougar and the hyena start to fight with each other, and you've got that split second where you can leap to your feet and run to safety. So you do, and you run until your body decides that it's not your mind, but your body decides that here is a safe place. So you run to, I don't know, maybe a clearing somewhere, and you stop. And the next thing you're going to do is you're going to shake, and you're discharging all the survival energy in your body, all that adrenaline, all the stuff that, you know, that we trap in our bodies when we have a near miss accident in the car. So we may trap that in and hold it. Whereas the animals in the wild, they shake and they tremble until that all of that energy is discharged. And then the next important step is that the animal is going to reorient. So they turn their heads and they look around, and then they get the all clear. It sends a message to the brain that says, I'm good to go, all clear, it's over, I took care of it, I'm safe, I'm good to go. And so when I work with clients and they discharge their trauma, they do the same thing. They will automatically, when they're finished, look around, and things will look different. You know, they'll be brighter or different, and then their whole bodies have shifted. So what we do in our culture is that we trap in these energies of trauma, and the animals can teach us how to work with our nervous systems in a way that keeps us healthy. So that's kind of it. I keep it, these long explanations. So my background is that I'm trained as an SE practitioner, somatic experiencing, and I couple that training with real live animals, with, you know, horses with powerful nervous systems. And so it amplifies that process, because the animals are supporting us to move through our natural stress responses to restore autonomic balance.
You know, when you're talking about the nervous system in the horses, you two got together on the fall solstice, and you did an amazing thing that I want you both to talk about, because I want you to, you know, give your perspective from the various positions. But one of the things that Jean brought out was this concept that the horse has like two brains that don't talk to each other. That the concept of our brain is the left brain, the right brain, they talk to each other, and one dominates, and boy, you can get into a lot of screwy things because you got this communication that's going back and forth. In the horses, it was a divided mind that, you know, the left side's doing one thing and the right side's doing another thing. Which, when you did your two events, sort of represented the southern hemisphere and the northern hemisphere, because Jean was in the northern hemisphere and you were in the southern hemisphere.
Yep.
When she was explaining that to me, it's like I sort of started getting an aha thing, you know, and it's like, wow, this is an interesting concept, because again, in this particular time frame that we're in, the transition that humanity in the biosphere we call Earth is going through, the energies are something that we have experienced as a species before, but individually never before. I don't think there's ever been, well, I'm sure there's never been a time frame quite like what we find ourselves in. And I do believe in the concept of as above, so below. So if we're seeing that, you know, this amazingly, horses, there's so many things you can say about them, but if you want to have an animal that is connected in so many, or seemingly connected, and especially because of their relationship with humanity, seemingly connected on so many different levels with nature on the one side, and their natural, how they were built as a physical machine, and the spiritual aspects of it, the sentience aspects of it, that you can have such intense relationships with horses. I mean, I've been with horses who blew me out of the water because of, you feel like, oh my heavenly day, that they've got more consciousness and spiritual energies associated with them than, you know, a stadium full of human beings. They just blow me away. And this unification of your two farms with Gene explaining this thing about the horse made me think in terms of maybe where we're at right now is a coming together on all levels of the biosphere. We are witnessing, because we're talking about it, the grandness of nature through, we're just talking horse right now, but the amazing things about nature and appreciating it more. And there's more and more people who are waking up to, you know, the magic of what we're around and we've been blind to for our society. So just before we started this show, I was in there pouring coffee and I look out the window and there was a hummingbird. And you don't see hummingbirds. I mean, they're here, but, you know, they're very small, and you hardly ever see them. But, you know, and it was like, oh, my gosh, what a gift. That's what my response was. Oh, my gosh, I've gotten so lucky here, you know. But that's not the natural response of people trained to say, what the heck is that, a big bug?
I have a really simple example of, you know, just how horses, if you do something on one side, you have to start over and do it again on the other side. So at Jack's farm, she was cleaning all the troughs. And when she put one of the troughs back, she moved it from the left side to the right side. So when the horses came, even though they know what the water trough is, they've seen it a zillion times, they've only seen it on the left side. That's where they're used to seeing it. So when they came out, all of them freaked out. They literally freaked out. She couldn't believe how they reacted to something that they've seen over and over and over again, but they were just not accustomed to seeing it in that particular space.
Well, that's interesting. Hmm. Huh. Okay, let's talk about the event. Because Jean recorded and shared with us what she was doing in Pennsylvania. Did you do any recordings, Cindy?
Yes, I have. I haven't processed the recording in terms of any editing or uploading it yet.
Okay. Interestingly enough, mine self-edited. It just cracks me up. It cracks me because I was going to record the whole thing. And it kept, I looked over and it would stop. And then when I went back and I listened to the recording, it stopped when there was nothing happening. So the people were up walking around or doing whatever. So it edited itself perfectly.
Oh, wow.
That was the voice record, not the, not the video recording, but the voice recording.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so this all was on September 23rd, was it, the solstice?
For me. 22nd. Yeah, 23rd for Cindy, 22nd for
I'm
us.
I'm saying solstice is the equinox, isn't it?
Yeah, equinox.
Okay, so did you present the same information, or were you both doing your own thing? And how you said you were connected. Were you connected electronically? Did you each have a cell phone talking to one another through the vent, or how did that go?
Yeah, we had we were on the phone together, and we had met previously to sync up our programs. I mean, hers was a little bit different than my, you know, what she said and everything, but basically it was exactly the same, and we kept everything synced up time wise.
It was quite amazing too. So I had an earpiece in my ear, just listening to Jean, and it was toned down quite low so I could just hear her a little bit, and ran the program, and I was just surprised at how much in sync we were in terms of what we were saying and the pace that we were at, even though, you know, mine was held outdoors, and the horses were surrounding us and standing over us or engaging with us the whole time, and Jean's was held indoors, so the physical dynamics were different, and yet we managed to roll out the program almost exactly the same way.
And Jean was in daylight and you were in the dark. I mean, vice versa.
Yes. Yeah. We were really early in the morning.
Yeah. And ours was at 6 o'clock in from 6 to 8 in the evening. And it was funny because I felt really bad. I think I even said this to Cindy, the horses didn't have any time at all to recover. As soon as we were done, she had kept him in the barn specifically so we could do this together, because there was no other place to have it where we could have all 22 horses together. So the easiest thing was just to keep them in a little bit longer, because they would normally go out at like 5 o'clock. And if you walk into the barn and you're 5 minutes late, they start kicking and banging. They want to go out. None of them. They were all quiet. They were all patient. I couldn't believe how patient they were for the whole thing. And the other thing that surprised me was every single horse participated in varied capacities. And I figured maybe a few, but I didn't expect every single horse to participate. That blew my mind. That really blew my mind.
And, you know, in a similar way with my horses, we had to start the program at 8 o'clock. And so we had to get out there at 6 in the morning, and it was still dark, and we had to get out at 6 in the morning to bring the horses up to feed them and get them ready. And normally my horses are nowhere to be seen at 6 o'clock in the morning. They're way down the valley doing their secret horse business stuff. And normally they know the routine, which is that at 8:30 in the morning, the normal routine is that they arrive at the gate, and then they come up through another paddock up to the yards to be fed and do their, you know, their work with us for the day. So what was interesting about that morning is at 6 o'clock in the morning, they were all there standing at the gate waiting. Cause I was thinking, oh, this is going to be interesting. I'm going to have to like go in the dark and go down in the valley and look for the horses and bring them up. But they were already there waiting.
Wow. So when you say participate, Jean, what exactly are you referencing? What are the horses, or both of you? How do you see the horses interacting with with what's going on? I mean, they're not sitting down, they're not chit-chatting with the people.
Well, no, right? No. When you listen to the recording, you can hear they're blowing. And when you look at them, some of them look like they're sleeping. Some of them are standing in the corner just with their heads down. Some of them had their heads out of their stalls. They were yawning. They were licking. They were chewing. All signs that they're working with energy. And as I walked around the barn, I could see that every single horse was doing something. And I knew that they were all participating.
Yeah. Yeah. And my horses were hanging around the humans. And so they did that as well. And they stood over the humans. They touched the humans, often where there is a concentration of energy in our bodies, the horses will touch those spots. So they were doing that as well. They would roll on the ground. Some of them laid down at people's feet. So they were doing all of what Jean said, and, you know, probably a little bit more because they had the space and the liberty of movement to be able to do that.
Now, when a human...
Well, you know, sorry. The interesting thing was there was towards the end, when, you know, we were just kind of wrapping things up, all of a sudden, I think like three or four horses peed right at the same time. And there was ones that were, they were pooping and peeing all at the same time, right at the end. It was pretty crazy.
Discharging and energy.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
What was I going to ask you guys? Okay. So, all right. Now, when a human being is doing a healing, all right, and they're, I call it moving energy. All right. For the most part, there is a certain amount of, well, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this. It's a pattern of working with the energies and a system of working with the energies, how you've done it in the past, how you were trained, all of that sort of thing.
But, are you talking about hands-on energy work?
Well, energy work in any way.
Like Reiki or something? Okay.
Like Reiki. Okay. Yes, Reiki's in there. But even, I mean, when you're just working with somebody talking to them, like you do, Jean, where you're looking at my body and you're looking at my energy and you're doing assessing and stuff, the horses aren't doing all of this, correct? They're just putting out a field of healing that the human can draw on? Or is there some kind of a sentience thing, because you're indicating that they know the areas where you've got an energy buildup? Do they, in your opinion, I don't know how you get in the, well, maybe you do get in the minds of the horses, but I'm just wondering, how are they perceiving the energy work? Is this an impossible question, maybe? I don't know.
So, well, from my point of view, the horses, you know, in a really basic way, it's about comfort. And so when we have discordant energy in our body, that's discomfort. And so the horses, you know, everything in nature, it strives towards balance and coherence. And so the horses detect this discordant energy. And from a herd perspective, discordant energy is equivalent to unsafe, because if we are emitting discordant energy, we're attracting predators. So from a really basic herd perspective, horses need to restore that or correct that discordant energy for the safety of the whole, which is a great teaching for us in humanity and for the collective, you know, to recognize that, you know, when one of us hurts, we all hurt. So the horses will work on that discordant energy to bring it back into balance. So, they are doing...
Yeah. Go ahead, Cindy. I'm sorry.
So they will adjust their energy output to correct the person's discordant energy. So, for example, if the person's nervous system is misfiring, and so there's a stress response, so there's a lot of chaotic pulsing, then the horses will drop their energy field through their breath. They will slow their breathing down so that their heart rate slows down. And when their heart rate slows down, it pulses this slower, coherent energy. And the person's heart rate starts to, I mentioned this last time, that their heart rate entrains to the horse's heart rate, because that's a law of physics, you know, that the stronger, more coherent energy field causes the weaker, chaotic one to come into alignment with it. So the horses know what they're doing, because they change their breathing to correct the person's energy field.
So would it be safe to say that they're working on the parasympathetic nervous system?
Well, both. Yeah, sympathetic. So they're dropping into parasympathetic, but they can switch to sympathetic. If the person's energy is too flat, like let's say they are really depressed and their energy is too low and they're like flatlining, then the horses will come in and start breathing really hard, standing over the person. They just start panting like they've just run a race. And, of course, their heart rate starts to speed up, and that causes the human's heart rate to speed up too, and brings that human's heart or their nervous system back into autonomic balance. So they work with both arms of the nervous system.
That is absolutely fascinating.
And the other part that they do, which I don't really get, so this is just a theory, is that let's say you've got an energy block in your body. It could just be that, you know, you've got a stiff neck. And the horses will come over and they'll start, they're just kind of like, not really, I don't know what it is, like muzzling the neck and just kind of giving it a bit of a massage with their nose. And what they're doing is they're causing that, because it's just blocked energy. So pain is energy that's blocked. So what they do is that they, through this movement, and this is the woo-woo part that I don't really have any physics behind, it's like they've got focused coherence. Like they are, it's like a laser beam of coherence that they are directing at a certain part of the person's body, which then causes the energy to start to like bust up and start to move and flow again.
Well, this is what I was trying to get to before. So they have some ability to be very, very knowingly active in a specific thing on a human body. In other words, it's more than just giving an environment. They actually
yes.
know how to manipulate energy and direct it
yes.
towards specific areas that the human body needs.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, they're so much more sensitive than we are. I mean, they know if they're grazing, they can sense if a frequency of a plant is unhelpful to them. They'll avoid it just because they're picking up a frequency. So they can actually sense things at a quantum level, and they can actually manipulate what's going on there to make the energy flow and to be congruent. Because humans aren't congruent. We're not, you know, we think one thing, say something else, do something else, whereas animals they're congruent. And they want, like Cindy was saying, the animals want everything that's in their environment to be congruent.
Yeah.
Because that's serving the greater good. That's benefiting the whole.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Because do they see humanity as a herd?
From my perspective, when a client arrives, the horses automatically accept them as a new member of the herd. And so they go through this process of assessing where does that person fit in the herd hierarchy. And just like, you know, humans, when a new person joins our group, we're sort of processing probably to ourselves, you know, who is this person? Who do they know here? Can I trust them? Will I like them? Will they like me? We kind of go through that level of assessment, and horses do something similar. So they're reading the person energetically to find out, how safe am I with you? Where do you fit in the herd? So it's always automatic acceptance when a client arrives. The horses accept them into the herd, and they just go through that process of trying to figure out where they fit and how safe are they.
So they don't see a separation between the human and the horse. We're all part of the same herd. Now, when you got one client or a few humans. If
yeah.
you've got a large group, does the dynamics of the horse herd change at all?
Well, it's interesting that they're always different, because the people who come are different, and like, you know, the group dynamic, the dynamic between individuals, you know, we're constantly changing moment to moment, so it's hard to predict. I just had a program last weekend. It's called the Waterhole, and some people call it Horse Church. So people come and we do a sort of a meditation, and there's a little bit of a interaction with the horses. And I had 28 people, and probably about two-thirds of them were new people. And all of my horses except one laid down around us. So we sat in a circle in the middle of our arena, and all of my horses, every single one, except one of them, laid down right, like circled us and just laid down around us. And one of my horses is a mini that's been rescued, and Jean's worked with her, and Jean tells me that she's seen some horror in her young life, and she's terrified of humans. and she was within about a meter of this group of strangers, and she was laying flat on the ground sleeping. So, you know, it's always different. So what that tells me is that there's total acceptance, there's total safety, there's trust, there's a willingness to be vulnerable.
Have you ever had an experience where your horses wouldn't work with somebody or that they were afraid of somebody?
I had a corporate group here a while ago, and there was a lot of unsafety. So the group didn't feel safe with each other. So, you know, there was a lot of self-protection and incongruence within the group. And at the end of the session, the horses clearly didn't want to be there. And at the end of the session, I normally, when it's over, I open the gates and the horses hang around and they wait for treats and they hang around and they want to interact with the humans a bit longer. But on that particular day, as soon as I opened the gates, they didn't wait for their treats. They just ran like the devil was after them. So that would have been a really good opportunity. I did try to speak to the manager of that group to say, you know, what my observation was is there's a lack of safety in the group. But we didn't get that far. I don't think the manager wanted to hear that. So that was an extreme example where the horses didn't feel comfortable. They engaged with the group, but they engaged with the individuals. But as a group dynamic, there was a lack of safety and trust.
Let me ask you about the horse that didn't lay down. Do you know why that one horse didn't? Was it the watcher watching to make sure everything was okay?
Yeah, there's always one horse that stands guard while the others sleep.
And speaking of watchers, do you have watchers in the same way that Jean has Jack?
Well, Jean tells me that they're all watchers. I think the first time we had a conversation, Jean said, "Oh my gosh, you have 17 watchers." And I didn't understand at the time what she meant. And she goes, "Well, you know, now that they know what you know, they've just raised the bar on you." And sure enough, you know, their tolerance of me has changed, and they expect me to be like them. So, you know, in terms of with absolute congruence, with respect, with being in harmony with nature, you know, all the qualities that we experience in animals and nature, the horses weren't going to tolerate my humanness anymore, and they expected me to step up a bit, a lot, not just a bit, a lot.
So it could be that the magic that you're seeing in your horses, because they are watching. I mean, not every horse is going to have these capabilities, or maybe they do.
Well, maybe Jean can answer this too, but my take on it, or my analogy is, well, that every human is on their own journey, and we're all at a different level of our awakening. And so it makes sense that, you know, that would apply to other sentient beings as well, you know, that they're on a journey too. So it's not a one-size-fits-all. Not all horses are at the same level or have the same destiny or purpose for being here.
Everybody's an individual.
Yeah.
So well, what do you guys want to talk about here? I mean, I think we've kind of set the stage as to what we're – where we started is that we've got two people that were working with horses, and they came together, and then they did this amazing event together. Do you want to continue with stuff like that, or you want to go someplace else, Cindy? Because I did want to
mention one thing. When we were doing the dragon transmission, I happened to tune in and listen to what was going on Cindy's end, and you could hear birds. You could hear them squawking and flying overhead. And Cindy said something. I couldn't hear. I thought she said they were black cockatoos. Is that right, Cindy? Do you want to mention that?
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, they were black cockatoos. They don't visit us very often, and they're not very common. So they have a spiritual significance, the black cockies. So it was just, and you know, I noticed this because we do this work in nature, and I'm working with my clients every day, that different birds show up. Like, we have wedge-tailed eagles that circle overhead. We have the black cockatoos, the white cockatoos. We have rosellas, galahs, the little blue ones. They're like blue wrens. So we have these different birds, and we have ravens, and they just show up at exactly the right moment whenever we're doing something, you know, in terms of clearing trauma. And it just constantly leaves me in this sense of awe and amazement that nature, it's not just the horses, but it's all of nature is responding to this clearing of trauma. Because every time we clear a trauma, we are clearing the collective of that trauma as well. So it's not just for the human that's doing the clearing, but it's for the collective. It's for their generations. So it's generations past and generations forward. So it just ripples out into you know, a bigger sphere when we clear our traumas. And the animals, I just see them responding, all of nature, just even the wind. it can be really windy, and the person is working through a difficult emotional event, and so, you know, the energy in their bodies is moving through and being cleared in a safe way. I'll add that bit. And the wind outside is almost, you know, you're talking about the as above and so below, so it's like as without, so within. And so even the wind can be like just building up into this like strong sort of clearing. And then once the person is cleared, it goes absolutely still. And it's just amazing how, you know, nature is in sync with what we're doing, or the other way around. But it's part of the whole aspect of healing.
Well, there's a whole infinitesimal untapped healing potential contained within the earth and all of nature that we're just beginning to work with.
Yeah.
And it's inexhaustible.
Yeah, and it's quick. It is so quick.
Bingo. Yeah, it's very quick. Yes.
Yeah. Now, is this the Gaia connection that you speak of, Jean?
Yeah, but Cindy utilizes it also. So in her own way, but she utilizes the energy of nature, and she's speaking about it. So she's using it too. She's just using it in a different way than I am. That's all.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of different ways. I mean, I don't even know that there's a limit of how many different ways that people can make that connection. And that's part of the magic too.
Yeah, I just heard about this gentleman that he works with the energy of the Himalayas. So he calls the energy grace. And that's the energy that he taps into for helping his clients.
But you suspect it's probably the same source?
It's all Gaia's energy, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it's all Gaia's energy. It's all coming from her. And, you know, you can break it down into subsets. You know, people work with the mineral kingdom to help them heal. Mm-hmm. People work with animals, horses and dolphins, and to help them heal. So it's just
flower essences.
Yeah, exactly. It's just instead of just taking one component and tapping into that component, it's tapping into the whole of Gaia. I mean, just, you know, if you think about that for a second, that's an incredible force that we're tapping into. And then all of that energy helps to increase the vibration of the earth and the frequency of the earth, which is why the dragons are coming back now, because the frequency to the extent that it's going to allow them to, you know, where the resonance is changing so that it will support the dragons. So they're coming back on en masse, which is just so exciting.
Now, Cindy, are you making the dragon connection also?
Not to the same extent as Jean. I can feel the energies of the dragons, but I don't have I haven't seen them like Jean has. And on that dragon program, I've seen a change in my horses since that program, where, you know, when you were talking about left and right brain being separate. And for about a week after that program, my horses were different. They didn't want to engage with my clients very much. They just kind of like they were, my guess was that they were integrating. And I noticed that one of my horses in particular was standing in the middle of a paddock by herself, just like looking, just gazing into the distance, like as if she was going, "What just happened to me?" So I kept an eye on her and she joined the herd later. But yeah, because it's unusual for a horse to be standing alone with no other horses in sight. So that was my horse Grace, who has a really powerful energy. And even when they were coming up for their morning feed, you know, it's the same routine, but when they were coming up, they were going in the wrong direction. They were scattered. They were just seemed like they were like maybe the left and the right brain had started to connect, and the horses were like, "Who's talking to me?" Because the left and right brain are starting to talk to each other. So the horses were getting this extra information that they needed to process and integrate. So they were different. And it took them about a week before they started to re-engage with my clients and perhaps at a deeper level with my clients than they have in the past.
You know, the same thing happened at Jack's at Churchill Farm when she said for the few days after the program, the horses were going in the wrong direction, or they'd go out and then they'd turn around. And so the same thing was happening with Jack and the horses there.
That's fascinating because they're witnessing or testifying that, yes, there was some kind of energy change here because we don't know what we're doing anymore. I mean, it's just amazing how they can exhibit what. Yeah, I mean, because people say, "Oh, yeah, you guys just make up these stories, and this is nothing real," you know. Well, the horses probably weren't listening to the stories, but they certainly are demonstrating a change since then.
Yeah, and it's an integration, isn't it? It's like there's new information and maybe new pathways in their brains that are connecting, and so that makes sense that there would be some confusion because the old way is not really working and the new way hasn't yet come into formation yet. And so there is this period of uncertainty or confusion until the new actually gets established.
And then once the new is there, they don't think, "Oh, gee, I liked where I was. Well, I'm missing that. I'm fearful of where I am now," right? They just go through it, and then they forget about where they were. They're just in where they are, and they are good to go.
And well, they exist in the present. Yeah, exactly. We're in the moment. And Jack's a completely different horse. He's a completely different horse than he was before. It's amazing, actually, how different he is. He's so much calmer. He's so much more, he just seems so much happier.
Yeah, and I have a horse, her name's Giovanna. And Giovanna was not very happy for a long time, held a lot of sadness and grief. She was a broodmare, and so she was used and to breed from, and her foals were taken off her. So she had a lot of grief, and she didn't really engage with the other horses very much and didn't really engage with the humans that much. And so she's always been a concern of mine. I've had her for quite a few years now, maybe four or five. And after that dragon program, she is like, come into herself in amazing ways. She is bright. She's engaged. she interacts with horses at the top of the pecking order, whereas because she was withdrawn and saddened and grieving the loss of her foals, she was kind of like just kicked to the curb a bit by the herd. Like, you know, she was part of the herd, but, you know, they didn't really engage with her very much. And I've seen her mutually grooming with horses at the top of the pecking order, some of the geldings, and she's like, she's locks in on my clients now. When a client arrives, she'll just stand with, you know, maybe 2 meters away and won't leave. You know, she'll just stay near that client the whole time. Even if the other horses ask her to move away, she'll just reposition and she does not leave the client. So she's engaged in ways I haven't ever seen her before since the Dragon program.
And her grief and her separation was because she was a mom and they were ripping her kids away, correct?
Yes, she's a thoroughbred, and so she's been bred. She comes from apparently good bloodlines, and so she's been bred for racing, or, you know, to breed racing horses. And so in the industry, they take the foals off the mares at a pretty young age. And so, you know, it's like puppy farms, you know, they just breed. So she's just bred one after the other after the other, and they just keep taking her babies away. So,
do you have any idea of what happened to that grief? I mean, it was the energies had shifted so much intensely in the biosphere we call Earth because of adding the dragon energy that she now could go into a state of not being, I mean, it's an energetic thing, but she wasn't being held down by that grief anymore. It was almost like it dissipated.
Yep. Or, it's gone.
Gone?
Yep.
Just gone.
Mm. Just gone.
Yeah, because the energy allowed an integration of sorts. So things that were maybe compartmentalized or you know, boxed off here or boxed off there, it allowed an integration to happen. So coming together and then releasing what wasn't energetically symbiotic at the time. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Any other changes that you guys noted? I mean, did you notice a change in yourself, Cindy?
Yeah, there was a feeling of expansion and sort of an excitement for future possibility. So there was a releasing of maybe some old patterns associated with fear or limitation. So, and that was just natural. And what I found was that, I got maybe 10 or 12 emails from, participants in the program, and they almost said exactly the same thing. So they hadn't mentioned it to each other. They hadn't mentioned it in the program itself, but afterwards they were saying the same thing, that sense of release of fear, the expectation of, you know, potential and expansion. So, yeah, everybody was saying the same thing without having conferred with each other. So they didn't hear what each other had to say. They all sent me emails independently.
Yeah, I mean, the energy, because I wasn't there, but I did listen to the tapes. And as a matter of fact, the tape that Jean put together is available on cosmicreality.net. That's cosmicreality.net. Just go to the Shungite store, and on the left-hand side, you see a category list. Down, one up from the bottom is Friends of Cosmic Reality, and you can get a download of that recording. When I heard that recording, at the time, I felt very grounded. I felt the energies. It was, you know, palatable energy that I was experiencing. But then I, you know, walked away from it. It's like I told Jean, I listened to a tape. These people actually engaged in an experience. And so I didn't, you know, the tape thing wasn't real big in my mind. But wow, I started to, and I wasn't making the connection to that tape of the dragons, but my body was starting to change. I could feel it. And I'm going like, wow, I feel like something's happening at the cellular level. You know, DNA upgrade or something was happening. And then I got really, I went through almost a week of feeling like crap, but 3 weeks later, you know, and finally I talked to Jean and she says, oh, that's the dragon energy integrating, because she had gone through the same kind of a physical hit at exactly the same time as I had. And when I got over that and everything seemed to come together, the feeling in my body was one of, interestingly enough, cohesion, in that I could, it was like it was more solid, but it also seemed to be more light, less dense.
Yeah.
You know, expansion is a good feeling for it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, listen, we're at the top of the hour here, so why don't we take a break? I haven't even looked to see what I'm going to put up. And we'll come back and I guess we're going to just do Carly Simon, the stuff that dreams be made of, because it's 4 minutes and 20 seconds. So we'll be right back. And Jean needs 10 minutes or so. Oh, Cindy, we'll have to talk amongst ourselves.
Okay, we can do that.
Change the direction, adjust the tuning, try a new translation. Don't look at your man in the same old way. Take a new picture. Just because you don't see shooting stars doesn't mean it isn't perfect. Can't you see? It's the stuff that dreams are made of. It's the slow and steady fire. It's the stuff that dreams are made of. It's your heart and soul's desire. It's the stuff that about your best friend. She's got a brand new shiny boy, and they're moving out to Malibu to play with all his pretty toys. And you feel closed in by the same four walls, the same old conversation, with the same old guy you've known for years. Use your imagination and you will see. It's the stuff that dreams are made of. It's the slow and steady fire. It's the stuff that dreams are made of. It's your heart and soul's desire. It's the stuff that stars off in your own backyard. Don't look any further and you will see. It's the stuff that
And welcome back to the Say What Show. It's November 3rd, 2018. My name is Nancy Hopkins. With me is Jean Rockefeller, who's not right here. She's doing something in the yard, I think. And we've got Cindy Jacobs from Australia with us. So, Cindy, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
And, okay, so we've talked horses while Jean was here. But I want to know a little bit more about you guys in Australia. Because, you know, I have a company that sells shungite. And we also have a project called the Shungite Beehives. Interestingly enough, there is a tremendous amount of interest in Australia concerning the bees and shungite. And what's happening down under? I mean, where are you guys at? Is there changes in your society? I mean, up here in America, we've gone through a change where you could kind of take politics seriously, but now it is so absolutely outside the realm of what has happened before that it almost is like a cartoon, or the people are characters, and, you know, it's like there's so much turmoil. And what's happening down under? Will you share that with me?
You know, we're a large continent, but we're removed from the rest of the world in a lot of ways. You know, like, we're just a big island, and so perhaps the remoteness of Australia is an advantage. We don't, you know, this is just my perspective, of course, and I live in a beautiful part of Australia, and it's rural, and so, you know, my experience may be different than everyone else's. But, you know, it's not the same intensity that it seems to be over in the U.S. in terms of all the conflict that's happening over there, and the violence, and, yeah, just at every level over there is just overwhelming. And here the pace is quite a bit slower, and not as just not as intense. So we watch what happens over there with great interest, because obviously what happens there affects the rest of the world too. And we have our own share of political conflicts and you know, the usual stuff. But from day to day living, I think it's way less stressful living here than it is over there. I have a brother that lives in Chicago, and I was there last year, and I felt overwhelmed by just the assault on my nervous system, just the amount of stimulus, the information, the pressure over there is just a lot different. And, you know, that's in comparison to living on 93 acres on the Southern Ocean. So it's hard to draw a fair comparison, given that, you know, my brother lives outside of Chicago and I'm here. But yeah, it's a more laid back, easeful existence here. More expensive, but more easeful in my opinion.
Now, are you guys aware, I mean, are you having ecological catastrophes like we have here, man-made,
yeah,
most of it?
Yeah, you know, we've got, you know, challenges with fracking and drought. Drought's been a big issue for us for quite a few years, and there's no end in sight. And, you know, in my opinion, I think that we have to except that this drought is a permanent existence for us, and that we're all called on to reflect on, you know, how we use water, and, you know, how we earn a living, and make changes to adapt to support the environment in a more sustainable way. You know, at the moment, There's a drought up north, and farmers are having to get assistance from the government and from, you know, charities to feed their livestock and, you know, just to survive. And this has just been ongoing for quite a while. And so the question is starting to come up that, well, maybe this is not a sustainable model, and maybe having livestock up and, you know, up north where there is a constant drought is not a sustainable farming modality. So the changes are happening slowly. As you can imagine, you know, to change one's livelihood and way of living forever takes time to adapt. So, you know, I think the country is going through a lot of changes at that level.
Jean's back. Jean? Or she was back.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. My question was, I just was trying to find out a little bit more about Australia. Because it is like an island, even though it's a continent, do you have more cohesion? Is there more working with nature than we have over here? Because we don't do that at all. Do you feel that people have an understanding of the connectedness of nature and survival?
You know, I guess it just depends on who you mix with, you know. So my circle, yes, you know, clearly, you know, there is a recognition of the importance of nature but, you know, I imagine it's just like over there. It's just a larger scale over there that, you know, you've got pockets of people who are absolutely connected with nature and understand the significance and the critical importance of supporting nature. And then there are other people who just aren't aware of it at all. So I imagine it's the same.
All the same, huh? But do you know that you have a bee problem there?
Yes, we do. Yeah, same as over there. Yeah. I think it's a worldwide thing.
Yes. And you do have Wi-Fi proliferation through the nation?
Yes. It might not be as intense as over in the U.S., but yes, it's the same. Yeah.
Because like I say, there seems to be a lot of interest from Australia in the Shungite beehives.
Yeah.
So I wondered if there was more people there, more connected to nature. I mean, you have the Aborigines there. Have you ever been out there?
Out
to
where?
To visit the Aborigines?
Well, I get, yeah. They're indigenous, you know. This is their land. And there is a, in fact, what I really am quite taken by is that there is a respect for the Aborigines and the fact that this is their land, and it's quite common when meetings are held that the meetings are always opened with honoring the Aborigines and their land. And so even like at the bottom of my email, you know, and a lot of emails will say that, you know, that we acknowledge the custodians of the land as the Aborigines. So there's more reverence for the indigenous people here than perhaps there is in the U.S. Not enough by any means, but there is more reverence. And the Aboriginal people, they live, you know, where, you know, they've been dispersed just like in the U.S. So, but there is a tribe of Aborigines or a community that live in my region, and even my land is on Aboriginal land, and there is an Aboriginal energy here, and we acknowledge the ancestors of the land here, and the Aborigine ancestors whisper to my horses, and they are present with us. So they are actually part of our healing process, and they're here with us. there's a place in the center of Australia called Uluru, and Jean, it's so profound. It's just the energy there is enough to just knock you over. And Jean and I, when Jean comes here, one of our plans, I hope, is that we'll go and visit Uluru. Even if you had no spiritual awareness, if you had no sensitivity, if you were not in your body at all, you would feel it. It's that strong.
They do seem to have such a magic about them. I mean, you just see pictures or you know, and there's not that much that you are, let's say, exposed to of their culture and that people. But they're the originals. I mean, they're still so connected to the land. The land is still sort of essentially pristine. It's got the original natural relationship of man and nature together.
The land holds less trauma than some other parts of the world, for sure. Yeah, I mean, it still holds a lot of trauma for how Aboriginals were treated. It's just the same as the Native Americans. You know, the way they were treated, exactly the same. So the land holds that trauma, but relatively speaking, it doesn't hold as much trauma as other parts of the world, like Europe and the Middle East.
So, Jean, what would you like to talk about?
Well, that's a really good question, Nancy. I don't know. Oh, well, you know what? I did see a very interesting movie this afternoon.
Okay.
It was called Three Strangers, and it was about this this adoption agency in New York that during the 50s and 60s, they were doing an experiment. It's very sketchy about who actually ordered the experiment or who started it, but they separated twins and triplets and put them into different kinds of families. So back in the 80s, there was this kid. He went to college in the Catskills. And when he got there, he'd never been, it was just his first year there, it was his first day. And all these people were running up to him and hugging him and kissing him and high-fiving him. And like, I'm so glad you're back. Girls were running up to him, kissing him. And then this other guy came up and he's like, Eddie, you're back. And the guy's like, my name's not Eddie, my name's Bobby. And then they ran into a phone booth, called this other guy Eddie, and they drove out to his house. And here they were twins. And then, you know, a newspaper got hold of the story and they posted it, and these two boys got together and they were on television. And then this other guy, one of the other, they were triplets. He sees them and he's like, oh my God, they're my brothers. So through their whole journey, they discovered later, like, their parents went to the adoption agency because they were furious that they would separate these kids. And, but what they discovered was that this psychiatrist named, Dr. Neubauer, he got this idea to finally figure out once and for all, is it nature or is it nurture? How are we formulated as human beings? What's more important? Is it our DNA? Is it, you know, our heredity, or is it how we're raised? And a lot of these people, once they got together, the twins were reunited that had been separated. They discovered that certain parts of their lives were very identical. Like these one set of twins, they both went to the same film school. They like their lives were very identical, but because they were raised in very different homes, who they became as adults were very different people. And with the triplets, these three boys, one boy had just an incredible upbringing. His parents were just absolutely amazing. They were very loving, very nurturing, just wonderful parents. And one of the other triplets, his father was a doctor, and wasn't there a lot, but his nevertheless, the family was very loving and very supportive. And then the other triplet, he was raised in a very, very strict household, not a lot of love, just very, very strict, very, very regimented. And that triplet ended up committing suicide. So what they basically determined was that nurturing can overcome anything. That was the end of the story, but they never, these people that were participated in the unknowingly participated in this experiment, they can't access the records. The records have been sealed until 2066 when they'll all be, you know, they won't be alive anymore. So there's something very deep and dark about the whole thing. Who actually approved it? The government was financing it, along with some private donations, but they could never, the findings have never, will never be published. So ultimately what came about the whole experiment, no one will ever know. But the movie's called Three Strangers. It was a really interesting movie.
Wow. And you know, that, that supports the theory of epigenetics, you know, which is the study of changes in gene activity and where our DNA interacts with smaller molecules that that can activate or deactivate our genes. So, you know, basically it's our, you know, our environment, or the nurturing as you're calling it, has an impact on our genes and how they're expressed. So that just supports that understanding of epigenetics.
You know, my mother would argue with this concept. She was the mother of 10. And I was in college, and I was taking courses on this, you know, adolescent psychology and this sort of thing. And these concepts of environment versus genes were something I'd been studying. And we're in the car, she's driving, and, I, you know, I'm a college kid, and I'm just babbling about this subject. But she's listening to me, and she says, "You know, it's neither genes nor is it environment." She said, "I've had 10 children. They came from an identical gene pool and had the identical, as best as you can, I mean, the aging and the time, you know, but the same environment." She said, "Within 2 weeks of the child being born," she said, "their personality was coming through." And she's got twins. They're not identical, but she's got twins. So she felt that it was not either of those, that each of the children had a separate soul, a soul that was not connected to any of the others necessarily by anything, but at least not by genetics, and the environment had nothing to do with the personality showing up at 2 weeks. But she felt very strongly that it was neither, that it was, so maybe this interest in doing this subject, and especially when you know how much control there is, that they've actually sealed those documents, maybe they were looking for something else.
I tend to agree with your mother.
Well, yeah, I do. Woman. I do just simply because I've got these kittens. Okay, now the mom and the brother, I think they were sister and brother, have these babies. And so all of a sudden, I've got like three little teeny little kittens. I mean, they were fairly young when she was amazing. She wouldn't let them come out initially, but until she knew I was safe. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, oh my God, what is happening? All these kittens, I didn't know how many go. Mm-hmm. But there's three kittens from the same genes. And the genes are very close to one another. They're brother and sister. And the environment is identical. And yet, those personalities couldn't be, they're totally different. Yeah. You know? Totally.
Well, that was the interesting thing that was in the movie. Even though the twins were separated, the triplets were separated, they followed the exact same path, which was just startling to me. So it was almost like it was like predestined that they would do this, even though they were raised in very different households, and that was by design. They did that on purpose when they separated them. But they still, you know, they went to the same schools. They had the same careers. They got married at the same time. It was really startling that the similarities, not even that they were identical, how their life path evolved.
Well, they've done other studies of twins, and they down to the point that their occupations are often very similar. I mean, separated twins, and also that sometimes it's the weird things, like they'll marry somebody whose names are similar. You know, there's other weird things that seem to be associated with the twin, identical twin environment. But how many people were involved in this? Do you know, Jean? Did they say?
They didn't say, but they one of the cryptic things they said at the end was one of the reasons why they didn't want to expose the research is because there's still, I think, either four people or four sets of twins, I'm not sure which it is, that still don't know that they have a sibling. So they were, that's one of the reasons why they didn't want to, you know, expose the research, because are they going to be angry about the whole thing that they never discovered their other sibling, or would they sue them, or just, you know, all kinds of things that they were concerned about. So there's still people walking around out there that have a sibling, an identical sibling, that they're not even aware of.
Wow. You know, and just to make a comment here about this is that, you know, if you look at maybe bigger picture, we all come from, you know, we have soul groups. And so it's possible that these identical twins who were separated and yet led fairly parallel lives, perhaps that's because they came from the same soul group. And so there is, you know, another layer or another pattern there at play, other than what's just manifesting in this current life.
Yeah, because if two souls came in and they were basically had the same script, you know,
yep.
Here you're going to follow same, this script,
yep.
This script.
Yeah.
They would still probably be drawn towards the same type of school, the same school, the same occupations.
Yep.
All of that would occur. It doesn't necessarily mean it was a genetic connection. It was probably more likely, like my mother thinks, the soul connection.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah.
Swinging this conversation back a little bit to what we were talking about before, I've been working with people with ancestral trauma and also with past life trauma. And so I had an experience last week that I thought might be interesting to share. It's fairly new in terms of me processing it. But coming back to how our experiences are registered in our bodies, even if it's a past life experience or an ancestral trauma, somehow it registers in our bodies. And our bodies have an innate intelligence that the body wants to complete a defense response. So sometimes if we get trapped in an event that we can't help ourselves get out of, our bodies want to take a movement, or excuse me one sec. Sorry. I didn't mean to cough in the you there? Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
Oh, we're here. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So our bodies want to take a response, take a movement or do something to correct or to take care of itself. So it's a defense response. And that's stored in our body. So coming back to when we complete a traumatic event. And I'll give you a really simple example was many years ago, I was in a horse float and the horse reared up and I was in the front of the float and the side door was open. And as he started his front feet.
What's a horse float?
Oh, a horse trailer.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
I'm picturing like a parade or something. In your
yeah,
head.
I do too. Wow.
No. So his front feet started to come off the floor and his hind feet slipped And I'm in the front, and I thought, well, there's nothing I can do here to help you. I'm going to torpedo out of this trailer, and you're on your own, buddy. I can't help you. And so talk about, you know, save yourself. So I turned, and as I torpedoed, literally, I just shot myself through the opening. His hoof came up and kicked me in the back of the head or the side of the head because I had turned my head. If I hadn't turned my head, he would have kicked me in the face. And so I got injured. I lost a liter of blood and spent the night in the hospital. And so when I was doing my trauma training, we were asked to bring up, you know, events in our lives to work with. So I said, oh, yeah, okay, let's bring up this one. And, of course, you know, I've got trailer trauma. Because, you know, it's like horses and trailers, you know, my body just starts to like, ooh, don't want to do that. And so that's the sign that, you know, I haven't completed my defense response or my body's not satisfied with the outcome. And so as I'm sitting in the chair and I'm explaining to the person, you know, when they're going, well, what happened next? And I'm explaining it. I leaned way back in the chair, like as far back as I could get. And she said, oh, what are you doing? And I said, oh, my body is leaning back so the hoof misses my face. And so as bizarre as that sounds, that cleared my trauma because my body took an action. So this is just an automatic response. So my body took an action that kept me safe and I didn't get hurt at all. You know. And so what the outcome of that was that a message gets sent to my brain that says, yep, I'm okay. I cleared that trauma. You know, it's done. And so now I can be in horse floats and I don't feel any charge. I don't feel any fear or anything. So that's just an example of some of the way of how our bodies want to take care of themselves. It doesn't have to be realistic. It's just what the body wants to do.
It needs a story.
Well, it has its own way of completing its defense response. As bizarre as it might be, you know, and unrealistic, you know, because my mind at that time thought, well, if I stay in this float, the float could tip over because it wasn't attached to a car. And, oh, no, yes, it was. So I'm trying to think, if I stayed in this trailer, I could be hurt more than if I torpedo out. So I overrode what my body wanted to do. So my body wanted to just stay there and lean back, but I overrode that and I got hurt. So the body has a way of knowing, an intelligence that we sometimes override. And so I'm working with this client on Wednesday, and she's we start with doing a grounding and get really present and we clear a little bit, connect to the earth energies. And so normally people feel pretty calm, you know, when we start. So, you know, we did that and I said, so, you know, just scan your body and how do you feel right now? And she said, I am shaking in terror. And I said, oh, okay, let's go in with the horses. You know, that's good. Let's go in. So the other thing is that it doesn't matter. With the horses, as long as you're congruent, it doesn't matter whether you're angry or in rage or you're in terror. As long as you name how you are congruent. And that works with people too. You know, as long as you know how you are, you're not projecting subconsciously what you're holding onto others. So we go into the horse's space, and it took a little while to settle her nervous system down so that she was present and you know, in the current moment rather than in her terror. And so, and then I invited her to like just revisit that sensation and what happens. And she said, and she squeezed her arms to her side and she said, I'm tied up and my arms are tied and I've got a rope around my waist and my feet are tied and I've got a noose around my neck. I go, okay, where we go with this? So I noticed that her left wrist was twisting around. Her hand was like jiggling. So this is her autonomic nervous system, her body remembered being tied up. So I did ask her, I said, you know, is this a past life memory? Is this something that you know, is familiar? And she goes, yeah, this is past life. So her left wrist was twisting. And I said, let's pay attention to your left wrist. What is your hand, your left wrist? What does that want to do? And she's twisting, and all of a sudden she slides her arm up her body and her hand up her body, and as if she's freeing herself out of this rope. And then she started to shake her arm, like, you know, this isn't a conscious thing. This is what she's following, the impulse of what her body wants to do. So her body, so she shakes her arm, and her arm's now free. And so I, you know, we're going nice and slow. And I said, so what's that like for you? She goes, that feels better, but, you know, I'm still terrified. And I said, okay, so what happens next? And she brushes her right arm as if she's brushing off the rope. And so so she does this movement of brushing off the rope, and then her right arm feels free, and she can shake her right arm. So now her arms are free. And so, you know, going nice and slow. So how is that for you? And she goes, well, I feel better, but, you know, my feet are still tied, and I've still got this rope around my neck. So she does more movements that are organic, like it's just what her body wants to do. And she said, I need to stand up. So she stands up, and so now she's managed to get herself free, and she's standing there, and all the energy has gone into her legs. And she says, I feel like I need to run away. And I was about to invite her to feel the impulse to want to move and move her legs so that she can feel that energy and the power coming back to her body, that she's taking an action to take care of herself. And she says, I can't leave because there's another person that's tied up as well, and I need to help them. So through visualization and a bit of movement, she clears that person, and then she grabs, I have these they're called carrot sticks. They're like a large orange stick that I use sometimes to point, you know, and direct my horses. And so I handed her the stick, and she said, and it became like her weapon, like her sword. So she felt this in her hand, and she was pointing it at whatever the crowd was. So this is all, I know it sounds weird, but it's the impulse that the body wants to make. It's not a conscious thing. She's just following through what her body wanted to do, but wasn't able to do to complete the defense. So in the end, she did this big discharge, and she ended up sitting back down in the chair laughing, and her body was relaxed and free. And so she cleared this trauma of this past life. So in effect, she never died in that past life. She never got hanged. And the person that she saved never got hanged. So as she was sitting there, you know, her body was still doing this discharge. So it was this, so she felt like tingling and buzzing in her body, particularly in her arms and legs. And often when we feel this tingling and buzzing, it's like a release from deep within the tissues. So it can be a very old trauma that's just, you know, coming out of the tissues. So she completed, you know, the buzzing and the discharging, and she did the final orientation, looking around and settling her nervous system. So by the end of the session, you know, she was happy, relaxed, clear, feeling safe. So what was particularly interesting about this was she had said to me that she thinks the person that she rescued was her daughter, you know, in this, you know, like soul tribe past life thing. And so what's particularly interesting was her daughter was the very next person that I saw that day. So her daughter was up next. And so, you know, we did the, you know, the grounding, and I asked her daughter, so, you know, scan your body and what are you noticing right now? She goes, I am buzzing. My arms and legs are tingling and buzzing all over. And I said, so is there any, can you make any sense of that? Is there any thoughts, experiences, any triggers? Is there anything at all in your awareness that you can link to this buzzing? Is there something that's happened? And she said, nothing that I know of. So what I think happened was that when the mother cleared her trauma, she also cleared, so what we say is that when we clear a trauma, we clear seven generations back and seven generations forward. And so although this was past life trauma, not ancestral, somehow there is a connection between this mother and the daughter that when the mother cleared the trauma of that past life, the daughter got, you know, cleared that, the energy of that trauma out of her body too. So that was pretty mind blowing for me. Like, I'm just like, I was like, yeah, this is just frigging amazing. And yeah.
Well, you know, I tell people, I say, as soon as you figure out, you know what you're doing, they morph everything and everything becomes a new story, right? But there, this concept of ancestral, karma, okay, that something, just because your great 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 grandfather did something, that somehow or another you're carrying energy that's related back to that situation, it never made any sense to me. I mean, I gave it no credibility. But then I'm listening to this woman who was a psychic. You know, I mean, she lives in Ireland, I believe, and she was a metaphysician working with all sorts of energies. And she had an accident, and they wanted to amputate her leg. And she was astute enough and connected enough that she said, this is not something that should be happening to me. What is this? And so she went back and she found that in every generation, for like seven generations back, I think actually in her case it might have been 11, I'm not sure why I'm saying that, but that somebody in the family had lost a leg. So she said, I don't care what they say about my leg, I'm going to stop this right here and now. And so she refused to have the leg amputated. And of course she was able to rehab the leg, and I'm sure she still has problems probably. But she probably also, I'm sure certain she did, she broke the cycle.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's possible. Yeah.
But isn't that a crazy thing to think about? I mean, the fact that you have a soul that goes through certain experiences, and we know, we've seen kids who absolutely had wounds from prior lifetimes, because kids remember prior lifetimes, who can say, well, I got this here because, you know, of this. And you can see deformities that are like scars that come from past lifetimes. That I can almost get around easier than the concept of some kind of a genetic DNA lineage thing. And that may go back to the soul family. I mean, it's like it's gotten so complicated now. It used to be simple.
Yeah. And, you know, the other complication is that we have to consider all of this as in the context of no time, you know, that everything happens simultaneously, that there is no such thing as time. You know, we have these different timelines, if you like, but everything is happening simultaneously. So in that sense, you know, when we jump a timeline and we make a correction in that timeline, that it impacts everything else.
Well, essentially, you start up another timeline. See, this is something that I've started to understand, particularly because of the Mandela effect. But when, so when you're going through life, you can either go to the right or the left, and the decision you make, you continue to put your energy into it. So you go to the right, and that's where you are, and so you're putting your focus, your energy into it. So the timeline that started up, when you even considered it, doesn't have the energy to continue. So it's easy to see how you can start up new timelines every all through your life, starting up new ones. But changing, going back into time, you actually create another timeline, because you've gone back to a position in time and made the decision to go the other way.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not that hard to go back in time, because if the energy is active in your body, you deal with that energy now. So that energy might have happened, you know, the energy that your body is holding, that memory, can be dormant for lifetimes. And in this lifetime, if the circumstances are right, that energy is activated. So there you go. You just work with that energy that appears in that moment, and that energy is linked back to the previous lifetimes.
Well, I like to think of myself as being in the spoke, like the center of a wheel, okay? Because time doesn't exist. It's a relationship of place and space. And what's that? Well, that's a frequency. A place and space has a very specific frequency. If you change the frequency, you actually are changing your place and space, okay?
Yeah.
So if you're the hub of the wheel, and all of your experiences and all the various personalities that you've been are the spokes and out there along the rim, it's not a matter of you leaving your position in the center of the wheel to go there. You draw them to you.
Yeah.
So I suspect when this woman was drawing that personality to her that had been tied up, okay, because there's no place in space, and then she goes through, and this is so interesting, this wasn't developing a story of how she escapes. This was her physical body going through the pantomime action of the escape,
yep.
reprogramming at the cellular DNA, because
yep.
the DNA is actually a biological internet. The Russians have actually proven this, okay? It's a biological internet. And the number one source of change to that DNA is the human voice. Okay, that's number one. But because it's a frequency. So as you are talking her through this, making her talk, making her put the frequency out there, okay? It was actually an energetic rewriting of an event on another timeline. And because now the body's not keep putting energy into that timeline disappears, even though it was in the past, because you've already made an adjustment, and now you're in a different present. Every time these people make these changes, they're in a different present. And that's probably why you say that they look around like, oh my gosh, what just happened? Because the energy has shifted. You have actually changed
yes.
place and space.
That's right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And the energy of that event has been discharged out of the body, and it's been reprogrammed so that the body has a new ending to that story.
Well, it was never there. You see,
well,
I mean,
yeah.
that's the thing, is that it was never there on the timeline that you now find yourself, because you went through that.
Yeah.
So the damage, you see, that's why it's so fast. That's
yeah.
why people can have basically miraculous healings, because it really didn't happen.
Yeah, so what does this suggest then for, you know, if we heal past life trauma, if we heal ancestral trauma, and so if it didn't happen, then that means that the people who harmed us never incurred that karma. So their lives have a different trajectory as well. And so, you know, our offspring, and so the amount of people potentially that are affected by one healing, like, you know, this woman that never got hanged because we changed that timeline, we vanished it, or whatever you want to call it. So, you know, what is the potential impact on healing the collective when we can go back and do, you know, changes like that?
Well, it healed her daughter without her daughter going through it, because the daughter was
That's
on
right.
a different timeline, because the
yeah.
mother had changed the timeline.
Yeah. and all the people who were about to hang her. You know, that their karma, their lives have changed as well because they didn't incur a consequence that they needed to address.
It's like a big eraser comes. Well, let's just erase that. That's bad karma. Let's get rid of that.
Yeah. And, you know, coming back to the opening conversation that, you know, you were talking about energies and frequency and stuff and the human resonance, you know, like the vibration on the planet is rising. And so we need to clear our traumas and we need to do it fast. And we need to do it safely, you know, so otherwise we just re-traumatize ourselves. So I'm excited about, you know, working with people by working with ancestral trauma and past life trauma, because it seems like the potential there to heal is amplified when we can work at that level. And coming back to the vibrations, we can't take in more a higher frequency if our bodies are holding trauma. You know, if our bodies are holding dense energies through unprocessed events and emotions, then, you know, we're kind of stuck. We need to be able to release our traumas in a way that's easeful.
Well, I find, too, that as the frequencies increase, it supports the release of these very dense things. So, it just makes it that much easier to heal these things at the root cause and allow these people to really experience a tremendous shift in energy and awareness.
I think you're right. And I think that it can also, it supports, but it can also traumatize, because a lot of my clients, a lot of my friends, people I know, nearly everyone I know at this point in time in our evolution, they're going through some big stuff. And so, you know, because their, you know, circumstances are causing, you know, their unprocessed stuff to come to the surface. Anything that's not in alignment for their highest good is starting to come to the surface. And unless we can deal with that skillfully, then we can find ourselves in a bit of trouble. So that's what I'm seeing with a lot of people, is that the stuff is coming up and yet they haven't developed the skill or the capacity to move those toxic energies through their body in a way that's safe.
Okay, you keep saying safe. Now, and then you just alluded to the change in energies. We may not be able to make it safe for everybody, because I think everybody's going to go through these things. So we have to give them something, because they don't have access to people like you. But we have to give the people, in my opinion, something to be able to say, okay, when you're going through these traumatic things, when stuff is happening that you don't feel right about, okay, don't make the judgment that there is something drastically wrong with where you're at right now. Breathe and just relax and let memories, pictures, and you're going to think of it maybe as imagination, but let these pictures go through your head, okay? Because once they go through your head, give yourself and your body permission to release them. You don't have to question them. You don't have to say, who was it, my father, my brother? Don't get into all of that. Don't get into the storyline. Just get rid of them.
That's absolutely correct. And I would just add, you know, to safe, when I'm talking about safe, I'm talking about how much our bodies can cope with before we go into overwhelm. And so, in my training, we're taught something called pendulation. So it's like, you know, when something comes up, yes, you feel it, you notice it, you become more like a scientist. You get curious about, oh, that's really uncomfortable, and that's, you know, it feels dense here, it feels, you know, whatever. And that's about as much as I can manage right now. So now I'm going to shift my attention to something that brings me comfort, so that my body will then release different chemicals that calms me down. And then when I'm calm, then I go back to it. So I pendulate back to it and go, okay, I'm gonna take a little bit, I'm gonna do a little bit more, go a bit deeper, and that's enough, and then I'm gonna swing out of it and go back to bring my attention back to something that brings me comfort. So each time we swing into it and we feel it for 1 or 2, 3 seconds, we've discharged it. And then we need to calm our nervous system down so that we develop more resilience. And then we swing back into it and we can go for another 2 or 3 seconds and then we swing back out of it. So through this gradual, just put your big toe in, take it out, put it in, take it out, gradually doing that, you can actually move through even the most horrendous experiences, but you're doing it what I call safely because you're not re-traumatizing your body or you know, your being. So the other thing that I talk about is that, you know, as therapists, healers, counselors, coaches, anyone who asks questions, you know, we're actually alchemists. So if you're telling me a story about something that happened for you that's really difficult, and I ask you a question like, well, what happened next? Or what was that like for you? Then I've actually triggered a response in your body that's going to release cortisol and adrenaline probably, because then, you know, you're going to feel more discomfort. And so I've got to be really mindful of how much chemicals that your body can manage before, you know, you're reaching this overwhelm. So that's what, you know, my job is, like, is to keep it, slow it down. You've released that little bit. Let's just process that. And then I might distract you and go, oh, what do you think about this? Or, you know, look around and what can you find right now that brings you comfort? And so I'm deliberately trying to redirect their attention to release a different chemical in their body, like serotonin, that can calm them down. And then when they're calm, then let's go back. Now, where were we in that story? Okay, so what happened next? And the person can go deeper and further and not get overwhelmed because they're just gradually discharging it one little bit at a time. And so it's really important for people who are therapists or people who are asking questions to recognize that I'm either causing that person's body to release an uncomfortable chemical like cortisol, or I'm directing their attention to release something that's comforting and joyful, and, you know, oxytocin or serotonin or something, another chemical in their body that brings them comfort and relief. So it's this kind of dance between the two, and you can move in between the two of them and ease and more easily move through the difficulties of complex trauma, you know, heavy emotions and unresolved experiences when we can be gentle with our nervous systems.
Yeah, I think maybe you would agree with me if we say that trust your body. Your body is going to be able to tell you, but you've got to be able to walk away. If it's starting, your body's telling you, I'm not feeling good about this, you know, just think about the flowers, think about a butterfly, think about anything, and don't think about this other thing. It's not going to go away if it's a problem. It's going to come back. But every time it comes back, just go, oh, this is this thing again, and gently be kind to yourself. You don't have to do any of this in one whack. Correct?
No, and that's exactly right. But sometimes this cathartic release, like, you know, we go really deep into it and we're going to, like, you know, just get to the bottom of it and get it over and done with once and for all. You know, that doesn't help the body. The nervous system gets overwhelmed by that. So it might feel on the surface, it might feel like this big cathartic release feels good. But then when you settle, nothing's really changed. So, you know, super slow and gentle, like you're saying, is really helpful. And the only thing I'd add is, you know, when you redirect your attention somewhere else, it's like you're also making a promise to your body, like, I'm not abandoning you. You know, I know that you're holding some heavy, uncomfortable stuff, and I'm just going slow, and I'm helping you out here by focusing on something that's pleasing so that we can go back to it. So, the, you know, because, you know, our default ignore the body, ignore the pain in the body by distracting or dissociating. And so we really have to form a better relationship with our bodies, where our bodies learn to trust us again. That just because I'm redirecting my attention doesn't mean that I'm abandoning you. It just means that I'm supporting you by taking it slow.
Awesome. Listen, we're at the 2-hour mark here. Cindy, thank you again. We got to do more of this because I think that there's a lot that we can get into. So anytime you feel like you want to talk to us Northerners, just let us know, because at least it's not the middle of the night for you.
thank you, Nancy.
Yeah, and it's been a pleasure. Jean, you want to chime in here? Are you there?
No, I just wanted to thank everyone for listening. Thank you, Cindy, for being on with us. And it was a wonderful show. I got energy the whole time. So as you were talking about body discharge, I was discharging. I think I even nodded off at one point. Like, oh, my eyes are closed. I don't know. And thank God I didn't have my, there's a lot of animal activity here. Lots of noise and stuff like that. So there was definitely something going on. It sounded too like, Cindy, there was a bird in the background at your house.
Yeah, there's lots of birds here today. Yeah.
Well, Shiloh was running from door to door, huffing and puffing, and somebody was out there. And, you know, I finally shut the door and he calmed down. It was like, I've had enough of this. Calm down. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's always energies that are at work when we're doing this kind of work. And, you know, it's just a pleasure to work with both of you.
Thank you.
I'm honored for you being here. It's JeanRockefeller.com if you want to talk to Jean. And go find out about Jack and the Watchers. And Cindy, it's FreeRainAustralia.com.
.com.
Free Rain, being free rain, like rain. R-E-I-G-N, is that it?
Well, it's just R-E-I-N. It means liberty of movement. You know, when you give someone free rein.
Oh, very
well,
nice.
Cindy has other, she has other websites too that have, where she explains a lot of how the horses work, the science behind it. It's really good information.
That one's called seahorse.com, S-E-horse. .com. So there's no A in it. S-E for somatic experiencing. SEhorse.com.
Yeah, that has a lot of good information on it.
Ooh, that sounds fun. I didn't hear about that one the last time. We'll have those links down at the bottom of the YouTube. And thank you again. And we'll Jean, thank you for bringing her back for us.
Well,
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. So everybody.
Thank you both.
Everybody out there in the galactic world, in the etheric world, in the 3D world, be safe and be blessed.
Say What? Say What Radio Show. With no agenda. It's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong.